I'll come right in. Rock flag and eagle.
All right, welcome everybody back to another edition of Chairgating, your NASCAR podcast for Belly Up Sports. I'm your host, Rattlesnake, once again coming at you live from the hipster capital of Austin, Texas. And thanks for joining me. We got a great episode this week. It came out a little bit later than previously scheduled. I started a new job and I am crazy busy. Got to pay the bills somehow, I guess, and thanks to all of you, this podcast is not quite doing it yet, but this episode is going to be great. We have an awesome interview with Natalie Decker, and I'll get to that in a little bit. First, I wanted to start, last week I talked about the best barbecue styles, and that blew up. People seem to like that a lot, and nobody yet has disagreed with me. A lot of the responses I've been getting on Twitter are people from Georgia, which I appreciate a lot, because I gave Georgia barbecue a bit of a hard time last week, and, you know, I was just trying to be honest, just saying Georgia has great food as an entire state. I mean, Chick-fil-A's from there. You can't do better than that. So I appreciate Georgia. I love their food. It's a great state, but I just had to be honest and, you know, say that Georgia doesn't really have much of a barbecue, like, significant signature barbecue style. Not like a lot of the other southern states. And, you know, I got some responses. A lot of people from Georgia seem to agree with me. So I appreciate that a whole lot. Got a response from Jacob on Twitter, who used to write for Belly Up Sports. Great, great guy. Wish he wouldn't have left, but, you know, we all got to do what we got to do. And he sent me a picture of the barbecue he got after the podcast. And I don't know if... has he responded yet? Let's see. Yep, so he sent me a picture of the barbecue that he got after listening to the podcast, because every response has been essentially saying I needed barbecue after that discussion, which I agreed with 100%. You can't not talk barbecue for more than like 10 minutes without craving some great barbecue. And he sent a picture, and it was, it looks like chopped pork, and it looked like mustard sauce, which I know Georgia does. I don't know if I discussed that enough in the podcast last week, but they do have a mustard sauce. It's just not... it's almost more like what South Carolina does, and it's good. I just wouldn't rank it that high compared to the other amazing styles. And, yeah, he just responded, and he said it is the mustard sauce with a little hint of vinegar, which I know that that's how you make that. You add some vinegar to the mustard-based sauce, which makes it a little bit thinner and adds a little, like, spice and flavor to it. But great picture from Jacob. Thanks a lot, Jacob. Definitely appreciate the feedback. And this week is what I wanted to talk about last week in my off-topic subject. Last week I posted on Instagram a picture of the top five NASCAR TV markets of 2019. And that's, I took all the data from all the TV markets from Daytona up into the Charlotte, the 600. So that's not including Pocono. I haven't taken the information yet from Pocono, but I doubt it would change this really at all, if any. And the top TV markets for that were number one, Greensboro, North Carolina. Number two, Greenville, South Carolina. Number three, Richmond, Virginia. Number four, Charlotte, North Carolina. And number five, Birmingham, Alabama. Really no surprises there if you've been a NASCAR fan. Those seem to always be the top five TV markets, maybe with Alabama changing out with like Indiana or Indianapolis, maybe even like Kansas City or, you know, Tulsa, Oklahoma also does pretty good with their NASCAR fan base. But overall, those seem to be the five TV markets for NASCAR consistently. I don't know what there is with if your city's has green in the name, I guess you love NASCAR for some reason. So I was looking at this, and now, you know, it's interesting that there's a lot of mid-sized or medium-sized cities such as Greenville, North Carolina, and Greenville, South Carolina at 1 and 2. Not large cities at all. And I just, for some reason, I was like, this is a good time to talk about some underrated middle-sized cities. Because me and my wife like to travel a lot. That's kind of our hobby, as I discussed last week's episode about barbecue, how I've been to all these places and tried these styles. It's because I like to travel a lot, particularly road trips. And the week before that, I believe it was the week before that. Maybe that was the fighting episode. So maybe like 2-3 weeks ago, I discussed road trip pro tips. And, you know, those are all based on my experiences of traveling a lot. We always take road trips. So I'm a big fan of smaller cities and also underrated cities. For instance, some of my favorite places are Asheville, North Carolina, Santa Fe, New Mexico, Birmingham, Alabama, and Houston, Texas. And, you know, some of these cities, like Asheville or Santa Fe, popular tourist destinations, I get that. I just love them. I know they're kind of a tourist trap, but I have family in Asheville, North Carolina, so I've been going there since I was a little kid. I've always loved it. And Santa Fe, New Mexico, I fell in love with because it's a lot like Asheville, North Carolina. If you haven't been to Santa Fe, it's kind of like the Rocky Mountain version of Asheville, in my opinion. I know you could probably swap that out with some Colorado towns, but I loved Santa Fe, and so did my wife. That's where I proposed to her, so you know we really like that place. Then the last city I listed, Houston, Texas, might not make as much sense if you're not from Texas, but Houston is very underrated. And same with Birmingham. You know, Houston is a huge city, but for whatever reason, it doesn't get the credit it deserves, in my opinion. It's one of the most international cities in the U.S., has some of the best food. I know Forbes has ranked it, I think in 2017 and 2016, as the number one food city in America. So it has a lot going for it. And Birmingham, Alabama has been criminally underrated. Birmingham has its problems, obviously, like most cities, particularly in the Deep South. But it's still a really nice city, really affordable. And the amenities that you get for your cost of living is incredible. So I love all those cities that I listed. But something I kind of wanted to focus on just real quick in my off-topic subject this week is underrated smaller cities or underrated mid-sized cities. Starting out number one, which was, I believe, number two for the TV markets in NASCAR, is Greenville, South Carolina. Population of 68,000, and that's not metro. These populations are just going to be city. I love Greenville, South Carolina. It's a lovely smaller city. It's, in my opinion, a great size, and it's not far from Charlotte. So you can, you know, drive to Charlotte if you need the big city experience. It's also not that far from Atlanta, Georgia. You can drive to the coast, in, you know, Myrtle Beach and Charleston. Beautiful beaches, really close, within a day drive. And I think just if you're off the coast of South Carolina, the rest of the state of South Carolina is overlooked a lot. And, you know, the rest of the state of South Carolina isn't necessarily much to write home about. And for all my listeners that are from South Carolina, sorry. But let's be honest, you could live in Georgia or North Carolina and get probably better, you know, living in those states. But Greenville, South Carolina is awesome. Awesome. Very underrated. That's why I picked it at my number one underrated city. For whatever reason, people don't talk about it. Number one, I love the Appalachian Mountains. I'm more of a mountain person than I am a beach person. So, you know, the cities I pick are going to reflect that. If you're a beach person, my list of most underrated cities might not be for you. That being said, I don't know if it's the distance between Greenville and Asheville, but Greenville, South Carolina, it's weird. Nobody talks about it. You talk about Asheville, North Carolina, and a lot of people, even here in Texas, will have great things to say about it. It's a really fun city to visit. It's in the Appalachian Mountains. It's beautiful, you know, good size. It's just like a smaller size city, and it has a really fun downtown. Well, you know what? Greenville has all of those things, but not as many people talk about it for whatever reason. Maybe it's because it's not as high up in the mountains as Asheville, right? It's kind of like more in the foothills, but one side of the city is the mountains. You're really close to the mountains. So if you want that mountain lifestyle, you can live on the western part of that city. And it's a lot of fun downtown. They have the river that runs right through there, and they have this, like, this walkway that kind of goes over these beautiful waterfalls. And then all around that area, they have bars and restaurants and a lot of things to do. People outside walking around. It's a nice weather town. And the cost of living is crazy cheap. I don't know if it's because it's South Carolina and it's not on the coast, but it's really cheap. And like I mentioned before, it's a great distance to, or it's, you know, a close enough distance to a lot of really fun big cities. So you kind of get all that in one, not to mention they love NASCAR. So I love that city. I would definitely consider living there if the opportunity ever arose. And yeah, that's why I ranked it number one for my most underrated smaller city. Number two is Fayetteville, Arkansas. And I don't know if this one is quite as underrated as Greenville, South Carolina, because they have the college, the University of Arkansas. But anybody that goes to Arkansas will always brag about how great Fayetteville is. And I feel like a lot of people just kind of brush it off because they're like, you went to school in Arkansas. You know, it's Arkansas. There's not much about Arkansas. Yada, yada, yada. Go to Fayetteville, Arkansas sometime and tell me you don't fall in love with that town. They got Rogers, Bentonville. It's like a really big metro area. Weirdly enough, it's because they have a lot of big corporations headquartered out of there. Especially for the size city it is. It's weird how many, you know, Walmart is headquartered there. Tyson's Chicken, I believe it's Tyson. And then J.D. Hunt, the trucking company. So they have like some really huge Fortune 500 corporations headquartered out of this place, or at least the metro area with Bentonville and Rogers. And they also have a college there. So it's this nice mix of like you could get a job and raise a family because they have good schools, really low cost of living, especially for the average income there because of these companies, but also with the college, it adds this like fun, young, hip environment, really artsy, a lot of nightlife things, not to mention the outdoor scenery is awesome. It's in the Ozark Mountains. It's beautiful. So I love Fayetteville, Arkansas. I'm not like an Arkansas Razorbacks fan or anything like that, but I love that town, and you know, I would never trade graduating from the University of Houston. I'm a huge Cougs. Go Cougs. But looking back, I'm like, I would have considered going to college here. You get the SEC experience in a sweet mountain town. And yeah, it's a great place. They have 195,000 as their population, and or 85,000 as their population. And that, like I said, that's just Fayetteville as the city. The metro is a lot bigger because of those other towns. And yeah, if you ever get the opportunity, I would definitely, definitely recommend checking it out. The rest of Arkansas, sorry if you're a listener from Arkansas, not much else to write home about, in my opinion, about Arkansas once you get outside of Northwest Arkansas, because the Ozarks are great. Yeah, check it out. Number three, Huntsville, Alabama. The population, 195,000, I guess, probably a better way to put that. But Huntsville, Alabama, it's actually a great little city in northern Alabama, right outside kind of, I don't know what they call that mountain range there, because it's kind of like the foothills of the Appalachians just coming down off Chattanooga. And it's really nice. It's just a really nice community. They have the NASA space something there. So clearly, you know, there's some affluent people that live there. It's not just like backwoods Alabama. And nobody ever talks about it. For whatever reason, I've been, you know, to Montgomery and Mobile. And I love Birmingham. I didn't include it because I don't really include it as a small city. But you know, for whatever reason, people don't talk about Huntsville, Alabama, and I've been there a few times and loved it. Met a lot of great people there, went to a fraternity party at University of Alabama Huntsville, or UAH, as they call it, and it's a really nice place, good cost of living, higher income, and if you want to, you know, start a family and raise kids, it seems like a really great place to do that. Might not have quite of the nightlife as Greenville or particularly Fayetteville, but it's just a nice place to go visit, and definitely, definitely an underrated place. Number four, I have Chattanooga, Tennessee at 179,000 for the population. So, you know, fairly large, about the size of Huntsville. And I don't know if it's so much underrated. Like, I think people know about Chattanooga, Tennessee. People have talked about it. They have UTC there, University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, the Mocs, or Moccasins. But I feel like it's kind of underrated just because of when you think of the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee, a lot of people think of like Gatlinburg for vacations and then like Knoxville, Tennessee, because of the college and its larger town. But Chattanooga is really cool. It's, you know, I think it's ranked like number one for biking, and it's a great kayaking city because the river runs right through it. And it's just a nice little town. It's got a good cost of living, good average income, and it's in the mountains. So you can't get any better, you know? If you're not going to be in the mountains of North Carolina, the mountains of Tennessee, in my opinion, are second best. But beautiful, beautiful. And, you know, you could drive to Atlanta. You can go to Asheville. You can go to Huntsville. You can go to Birmingham. You can go to Nashville. You can go to Knoxville. It's actually a pretty nice location. Yeah, it's a great, great place if you love the outdoors. If you're big into biking or kayaking or hiking, it's a great place for all that. And I think it's, like I said, I think it's just underrated because other people think of other towns in Tennessee and the Smoky Mountains. And to wrap up my top five most underrated small cities, probably the most controversial one here, population 176,000, and it is Sioux Falls, South Dakota. That's right. I actually decided to leave the South to pick one. And, you know, I might be a bit biased here because if you listen to this podcast, you might have heard me talk about this in the past, but I have previously lived in Sioux Falls, South Dakota at a young age. And it was like growing up in the 50s. I mean, we could ride our bikes anywhere at any time of the day or night and never have to be worried about, you know, crime or anything like that. It's like this picturesque place, honestly. You know, it's not like a great nightlife or anything, but it is, in my opinion, one of the best places you can possibly raise a family. The cost of living is insane, and, you know, just city population-wise, they have almost 200,000, and, you know, so it's this really great size. You're like three and a half to four hours from Minneapolis, similar to like Omaha, Nebraska. Kansas City's a bit further, but you know, you're within a day's drive to some really nice Midwestern big cities. The only downside to Sioux Falls, the reason I could never live there again, is the weather. I mean, honestly, the winters are brutal. You have to be from up north to appreciate this place, because if you didn't, and when I say up north, I'm not talking like New York or, you know, Connecticut. No, like you have to grow up in like the Minnesota, like Great Plains, Midwest region to fully comprehend just how cold it gets there. You know, I was visiting my uncle who grew up his whole life in Columbus, Ohio, a big Buckeyes guy. And he has lived in Minneapolis for quite some time now. And he even said, I grew up in the Midwest, you know, arguably. I would probably argue about Ohio being the most. What he grew, you know, he was like, I grew up in cold weather. I know about winters. But he's like, I don't know anything about these kind of winters. Because when you get out into that area, the winters just hit you harder than anything you've ever, like, lived through. So it's almost like a sense of pride also to be from there and to be able to survive these winters. Because you know that nobody else in the country can come to where you live and handle these winters. My family did for quite some time, but we got the hell out as soon as possible. Especially my parents, you know, who grew up in North Carolina. They handled it as long as they could, but it is cold as hell there. So, if you're from that area, you're used to cold weather, honestly, Sioux Falls is the place you gotta go. No crime. Everybody is, like, middle class. It's like the poor people there are, like, lower middle class. The rich people there are, like, upper middle class. You know, it's this awesome place. The schools are great, and everybody, nobody's, like, stuck up or snobby either. Like, even the wealthiest people there will go down to the local bar and, you know, drink a South Dakota martini, which is a Bud Light with olives. And I know that sounds weird, but when you drink these beers in these huge, tall pint glasses or tall mugs, they put a bunch of olives in there and they float up and down. It's really weird. But they continuously float up and down. And so kind of the joke is like the most exciting thing to do or most exciting thing to see in South Dakota is watching your olives float up and down in your beer. Everybody drives snowmobiles or sleds, as they call them there. You know, Corvettes, Harleys. Harleys are a big thing just because of you got the Sturgis rally, the motorcycle rally on the other side of the state. And yeah, we're going to talk about snowmobiles actually in the interview with Natalie Decker. But yeah, those are my top five most underrated smaller cities. I decided I'd keep this one a little bit shorter. Wouldn't talk about it for like 40 minutes like I did about barbecue. But if you haven't been to these places, I think you might enjoy checking them out. Maybe not take a vacation to Sioux Falls, but if, like I said, if you're from up there, you should probably check it out if you're looking for a new place to live. Especially if you're like me, and you know, you've lived in bigger cities and you've lived in smaller cities and you prefer the smaller city size, you know, the under 200K population, then I think you'd really like any of the five that I listed because they're all really great options. If you're from out west, sorry, I don't know. I guess I haven't spent enough time in smaller cities on the west coast. And if you're from the northeast, I'm sure there's a lot of great smaller cities in the northeast. I just don't really know about them as much. I just have spent a lot of time in southern small cities and midwest small cities. So that's why I listed those five. So anyway, hope you enjoyed that list. And let's not waste any more time. Let's get right into the whole reason that you're listening to this episode. I had a great conversation with Natalie Decker, one of the nicest people I've ever interviewed. No, the nicest person I've ever interviewed. Yeah, so I hope you enjoyed that. Let's get right into it. All right, I'd like to welcome my next guest on, Natalie Decker, a woman who needs no introduction. Thanks for coming on, Natalie.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, where are you at right now?
I'm currently at my apartment in North Carolina.
Ah, okay, okay. How is living in North Carolina from somebody who's from Wisconsin?
I love it. The weather is so beautiful. It does rain more than it does in Wisconsin here.
Oh, really?
But the storms aren't usually as bad as they are in Wisconsin, but I love it. I've been here for about a little over a year now. And I live down here with my boyfriend, and he's originally from Minnesota. So we both really love it down here.
Yeah, two Midwesterners down south. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, speaking in North Carolina, last week in my episode, I was kind of ranking the best barbecue styles. And knowing that you're from Wisconsin, I won't even bother asking about barbecue because I just don't trust your opinion. But what's your favorite type of food?
I don't know. I'd probably say watermelon.
Water? Is that even a type of food?
For the past, like, 2 weeks.
Okay, I guess I'll count it. I mean, that's kind of a lame answer, especially from Wisconsin.
It changes weekly, I would say, okay. Or maybe daily.
All right, that's fair.
Right now, I'm eating watermelon.
I was hoping you would say something like cheese curds or something very Wisconsin.
Oh, I love cheese. Well, that's a given. I'm from Wisconsin.
Right. So. I want you to live up to the stereotype, I guess, in my head. Yeah, and for those who may not know, you grew up playing hockey, and your family competed in and owned a track for competitive snowmobiling. That's correct, right?
Yes, that
okay.
is correct.
Do you still, like, do any of those two things? You have time with your busy schedule with racing?
I don't remember the last time I legitimately played hockey. I went, like, ice skating with a hockey stick and a hockey puck, but we didn't like actually play a game or 3-on-3 or anything. That was just like last winter. But whenever I have time in the off season, in the winter, I try to go home, and I love to go snowmobiling. I'm from Wisconsin, so I like going riding on the trails. I don't race snowmobiles. I wasn't at the race, the snowmobile races this past year, but my dad recently sold it, so it was kind of harder for me to make it out there. I think my dad just made it out there. But it was really fun growing up and being able to go and to my dad's racetrack and be a part of it. It made me learn a lot about the racing business, even though it was different from NASCAR and anything I do now. But it's still very similar on the business side, which was really cool.
Did you ever consider, like, getting into competitive snowmobiling, or were you always just kind of, I know at a young age you started karting, but were you just always kind of like, no, I want to go, like, race cars instead?
So there's actually a really funny story about it. When I was 4, my dad bought me a snowmobile and some racing, like, gear and everything, and he won the world championship. His racetrack, if you win there, you're a world champion.
Right.
So they were all like hyped up, like, you know, Chuck Decker's daughter is gonna be racing, and I practiced every day after school, and they're really slow, you know, you're only in four, so they don't go that fast, so all you have to do is hold it wide open.
Okay.
And the start of the race, there was about like 20 other sleds, and I think that freaked me out or something, because I only went about 10 feet, and I told my dad I wanted to quit. That was my snowmobiling career.
Man, if there's a video of that, we need to see it someday, that's all I'm saying.
I mean, I have a picture. I have a picture of my dad and I. I still got a trophy for trying to participate in the race, but
that's great.
Yeah. There's probably a video somewhere.
Yeah, some VHS tape.
I'm pretty sure when my dad walked back into his office, my grandma was like, "What was that? Like $1,000 per foot? Like she didn't even race," and he was all mad.
Oh man. Well, I think you lived up to the hype for your dad, at least.
Yeah,
and
I'm glad I started liking NASCAR and stock car racing.
Right, definitely, especially after that incident, he was like, "Oh God, yeah. Who did I just race?" Yeah,
yeah.
Well, yeah, you're currently driving in a lot of series. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't you competing in trucks, ARCA, K&N, and Trans Am?
Yeah, so I'm doing 5 Trans Am races. I'm doing a lot of truck races. I don't even know how many, and I'm not doing the full season.
Right.
And then I'm also doing ARCA and K&N, but I'm not doing any more races this year. I did them all at the beginning of the year.
Okay. Okay, so I guess with all those different types, what's your favorite thing to race? Like, what's your favorite race car?
Right now, it's definitely the truck series.
Yeah.
Like what I'm focusing on, so it's kind of my favorite right now. But I do really love the Trans Am series. It's a wonderful series, and the team I'm with, he's a friend of my dad's who also raced snowmobiles back in the day.
Nice.
And they're just he's like almost my North Carolina dad. He also lives here with his wife, and it's really cool. I'm really close with them, so that makes it super fun.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. That seems like a really cool transition, actually. So you're enjoying driving those cars? I know it's probably quite a bit different, right?
Oh, they're so different. And road racing is just completely different. You can't even really compare the two, but it's a fast car, so it's fun. It's really fast.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, something a lot of people have been bringing up. Well, also, you know what? We're talking about race cars. Last episode, actually, I was talking about the W Series, and I know that you made it all the way into, what was it, the final 28 drivers during those tryouts? I was just wondering, like, what was your experience like with open wheel cars?
It was so different. I think I didn't expect it to be how it was. So when I went there, like, my first couple, laps out, like a rock hit my helmet, and I was just never used to that. I was like, what?
Yeah.
But it was just so different, and there's just so much downforce involved with those cars, and I just wasn't very knowledgeable about them. But it was fun. I don't know if I would want to be an open wheel racer, but it would be fun to do some races every now and then, just because they were so cool and it was so different.
Well, not to mention all the pictures you got to take in Spain, right?
Yeah, that was awesome too.
Yeah, I got my wife into racing, and then when she found your Instagram, she was like, "Oh, now I really like racing." So she's a big fan of your Instagram. She would kill me if I didn't bring that up. Yeah. Yeah, I guess something that a lot of people have been bringing up this year also is the importance of artificial grass and installing that at every NASCAR race. And I figured after your unfortunate wreck in Kansas, you might have something to say about that topic, because, like, realistically, watching that video, it looks like with artificial grass, you probably would have been fine, right? Do you have anything to say about artificial grass?
Yeah, I definitely would have been fine if it was like it was here in Charlotte, but it just sucked, you know. It was just a racing thing, and I got the air taken off of me. But I mean, it would be great to have all the tracks have artificial grass, but I know how expensive that stuff is.
Yeah.
And I can see why they don't all have it.
Yeah, but, yeah, I'm sure.
But it would be really nice. I've been in a few wrecks, and that was actually probably the one that hurt the most. It didn't look like it hurt, but just the way I hit the grass, I didn't expect it at all to feel like that. But yeah, I think it would be pretty cool, or even if they just made it all pavement and then painted over it. Even that
just
would be nice.
Just paint it green. Look like nice grass. Yeah. Wow. That's actually really interesting to hear that those grass racks.
That'd be cheaper than artificial grass.
Yeah. That's genius, actually. I think you should own the racetrack, not your dad. That's what should have happened.
Yeah, I wish. That'd be awesome.
All right. Last question, because I know, you know, you got to get going. We don't have much time. But very, very important question. One that I'm sure all the listeners really tuned in just to hear this question. I know you're a big cat person. So at the end of the day, are you team dog or team cat? And you can only choose one.
I would have to pick dog, but I do have a cat.
You have, yeah, like, you have a few cats,
own a
right?
Dog, I have a cat, but I'd rather, I think I would pick team dog.
Oh, okay.
My cat doesn't like to go for walks
right,
or like play fetch or treats.
Like your cat likes you only when it wants to like you kind of thing?
Yeah. She's really sweet. She's deaf, so that's why I think I like her. She likes race cars because she can't hear them. But I think I'd have to pick dog.
Okay. I think that was the popular... Yeah, good pick. I think the audience will like to hear that.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I'm sitting right next to my dog right now. She's sleeping while we're talking. Everybody loves dogs.
That's so true.
But thank you so much for coming on, Natalie. And I'll definitely be cheering for you now that you've come on the podcast. And I know my wife already does, so you have two fans.
Oh, yay. Well, tell her I say hi.
I will. Don't worry. She'll listen to this. All right. Thanks a lot, Natalie.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. All right. I hope you enjoyed that interview. As I promised, I would be back on here after that Austin Dillon interview, trying to get some bigger name interviews. And I think I've so far fulfilled that promise. I mean, that was so great to get to talk to Natalie Decker. I know she's been real popular. A lot of people have been talking about her lately. And, you know, all of my doubts, I guess you could say, about Natalie Decker were just completely washed away after that interview, because she was, as you could tell in it, she was so sweet, so nice. And she was great to have on here. It's kind of weird when you get to interview these drivers. You go in a little bit like, what's going to happen here? You know, as you all remember, I'm an Austin Dillon fan. And so when I got to interview him in his hauler, not going to lie, obviously I was nervous, but I think most nervous because I'm an Austin Dillon fan. And I was like, man, if he's an asshole, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I know I talked about this in that episode, but it's I have that same feeling with every interview I do. I'm like, what's this person going to be like? You know, they're a complete asshole. It's just, I can't help it. I'm going to have an opinion about them in a certain way. And I was a little nervous, you know, going into this interview with Natalie also. But the second she started talking, I was like, oh my gosh, she's so sweet, so nice. And yeah, the nicest person I've ever got to interview. And she has converted me into a Natalie Decker fan, honestly. And if you listen to that interview, I don't know how you couldn't be, because just on a personal level, great, great person. And, you know, maybe she'll come on again later. And like I said, I'm going to keep this rolling. We've had Bob Pockrass, we've had Austin Dillon, and now Natalie Decker. We're going to get some big name people on this podcast. So if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, been supporting us, buying our shirts, following us on Instagram, Twitter, going to Belly Up Sports and supporting us there, I appreciate it. I appreciate everybody that has been following and listening, and I can't say that enough. Starting this new job, with how crazy busy I've been, I feel like sleep isn't even an option anymore. I'm up at like 6 a.m. now, something I'm not used to. So, you know, it gets difficult sometimes when you get this crazy busy. But when I see, you know, people responding to me on Twitter and Instagram and showing support, especially when I haven't been able to post as much and do as much as I'd like to normally, it just really kind of keeps me going and saying, this is definitely worth it, and this is what I want to do. So I just, once again, want to, you know, thank Natalie Decker for coming on. Thank everybody that has come on this podcast, not just racers, but also other influencers or people with other podcasts. Thanks, everybody, for coming on, and thanks for the fans for coming on and supporting this podcast. I guess just to wrap up the episode, this isn't going to be a long one, so sorry about that. I know some people might appreciate that. Sometimes I talk too much, don't know when to stop. But, yeah, it's not going to be a long one. I'm just going to wrap it up and talk about Pocono. There's, you know, you could say there's a lot to talk about, and also there's not much to talk about. If you follow Jeff Gluck on Twitter, which I'm sure you do if you follow this, if you listen to this podcast, his results came out for the Pocono race, and only 24% of people said it was a good race, which is the fifth worst race in the last four seasons. That's pretty tough. And as his tweet mentions, this snaps a streak of three straight races of 85%+. So 2019 NASCAR has been on a roll, baby. It's been so entertaining, and it's been great. And for all the NASCAR fans, this is like the height right now. We've been enjoying some incredible racing, particularly at tracks that we're not used to seeing great racing at. Pocono seems to be a stain on that reputation. And if you were going to ask me, you know, 4 or 5 weeks ago, which race was going to kind of break that tradition or the, you know, the spell of really incredible races to watch, I probably would have picked Pocono. I'm not going to lie. It's just, I don't know. A lot of people have been discussing that we don't need two Pocono races, and usually I disagree with people talking that, you know, about those type of things. I'm like, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But with Pocono, it's one track that I'm like, you might be right. We might only need one race of this a season, especially if we can bring on a track like Nashville or Rockingham. The Pocono might be number one or number two on my list to remove one of the two races. Normally, I probably would have said an intermediate track, but with this aero package we have right now, the intermediate tracks have been really entertaining. Texas wasn't incredible by any means this year, but it sure was a lot better than we've seen recently, and it was better than Pocono. So, you know, it's Pocono. We get what we get. I didn't expect much going into this one, so I'm not too distraught about it. You all watched the race. Kyle Busch got another win, another notch in his belt. I mean, he's just doing incredible this season, as if he wasn't already doing incredible. Brad Keselowski, number two, another driver that is having an awesome season. Eric Jones at three was really cool to see. You know, a lot of people talk about, oh, is Eric Jones the next one out of his ride? He hasn't been producing. And this whole time I've been saying, I don't know what y'all are talking about. He's a young driver, and he looks really talented to me. And, you know, people will say, well, look at the equipment he's in. I don't know. I just don't see any other young up-and-coming driver to replace him. Because I'm like, yeah, but what happens if you put somebody else in there? Who knows what they're going to do? I think Eric Jones is an incredible driver. And so seeing him finish third was great. Chase Elliott, four, that was awesome. Representing for the Chevys, as he usually does. Clint Bowyer, five. Denny Hamlin, Joey Logano, Daniel Suarez getting up there. William Byron. You know, these Chevys are looking competitive. Who else do we got? Oh, Eric Almirola finishes out with the top 10. So, you know, not much to see there. Kurt Busch right outside. Ryan Blaney. Daniel Hemric. He was leading there for a little bit. Obviously, he had to stop to get fuel. That's why he was in the lead. But, you know, he finished top 15. Good for him. Rookie going for that. I think he'll probably win the Rookie of the Year battle. I think he's better than Priest. No offense to Priest. Not saying he's not a great driver. I just think Daniel Hemric, he's a good driver. And I think we'll continue to see him do well. So, yeah, that was Pocono. Hopefully next week we'll get some better racing over out at Michigan. Normally, I wouldn't say that, but, you know, this package has been really good at intermediate tracks. So I'm staying hopeful. I say next week. That's this week. What am I talking about? This new job's got me all backwards. It's insane. Yeah, the standings right now, obviously, Kyle Busch in the lead, right? He has four wins, just pretty much doing what he did last season, but by himself now. There's no Kevin Harvick doing it this year anymore. So he's in the lead. Joey Logano at number two. He only has one win, but he's been crushing it with, you know, top fives, top tens, and points. Just been doing really well. Chase Elliott. Started the year out slow with Hendrick and Chevy, but he is in third with one win. Brad Keselowski, who's been, you know, just crushing the season, he's got three wins. He's in fourth. Kevin Harvick, winless Kevin Harvick, which I don't think anybody would have suspected based off last year. I'm kind of happy about it. I'm not a huge Kevin Harvick fan, as you already know from listening to this podcast, but he's still somehow in fifth. He's just been, you know, pointing his way into everything. Daniel Hemric also, we were talking about Daniel Hemric a second ago. Denny Hamlin. God, I cannot already. Man, this other job is crushing me. Denny Hamlin, six. Got two wins. Look at him. You know, 2019, he's looking like he's 15 years younger out of nowhere. Martin Truex Jr., three wins. At number seven, and then rounding out the top 10 is Kurt Busch at eight, Ryan Blaney at nine, and Clint Bowyer at 10. But those wins are really locked up in those top drivers. They are just locking them down. If you get one win this season, you're getting multiple wins, it seems like. And that's been one complaint people have had this season. Well, we always see the same guys win each week, and they're not wrong, but I mean, it's no worse than last year with Kevin Harvick and Kyle Busch, you know, each week switching off who was going to win. So it's no worse than that. It seems like we get some more winners this season. And the lead changes have been a lot better. Pack racing's been better. So overall, I know Pocono wasn't a great race, but 2019 NASCAR, in my opinion, is still going strong. I think we'd need a couple of down weeks to really start to question the season. I know not everybody's blown away by it. I understand that. But I think it's just the product on the track has been a lot better than last year. And I'm staying optimistic. And could Michigan this weekend not be good? Yes, it is Michigan. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say Michigan's going to be an incredible race. But you know what? Based on this aero package, I am so optimistic. Just like I'm optimistic about Kentucky. And I've never said that. So Pocono, sorry, but 2019's still good, and I'm still optimistic, and hopefully we get to see a couple more drivers get some wins here. I think Ryan Blaney is a guy that we could see win. I'm surprised Kurt Busch hasn't got a win yet. He still looks incredible. So I think there's a couple drivers that are just kind of sitting out there waiting. I know earlier I said I think Austin Dillon's a driver will seek it a win. I still think that's true. When he, you know, he gets knocked out of the races, but his equipment's been looking better, and I think he looks better than ever this year. So if you're an Austin Dillon fan, as I'm sure the you know, whatever Austin Dillon fans are out there, you probably listen to my podcast because you know my feelings towards him. They're saying he's pretty much out of the playoffs now after Pocono, because points wise there's like almost no way he's getting back in. But I haven't given up hope that I think he actually might sneak a win in here, which is what he does every season to get in the playoffs. So not giving up hope. Either way, I've been enjoying this season, and I think I'm going to keep enjoying this season. So, once again, want to give a huge shout-out to Natalie Decker, and I can't thank her enough. I know that's like half this podcast is me thanking her, but, you know, she was incredible. So sweet. Very nice. More importantly, thank you to the fans. Once again, thanks for listening. Thanks for sticking this out with me. Hopefully only a couple more weeks of this no sleep cycle that I'm going through from work. Once I get in the groove of things, we'll be back better than ever. And I will be going to probably hopefully three more races this season, at least two more races. So I think each race I go to, I'm going to go to Darlington, hopefully go to Talladega, and probably Texas Motor Speedway again. And hopefully at each one of these, I'll be able to get another interview with another driver, because I'm starting to get a lot of these good connections. Also, huge shout out to Belly Up Sports. They've been helping me out a lot as well. They helped me out with this interview with Natalie Decker. So things seem to be falling in place. No matter how worn out or beat out I feel these past couple weeks, it seems like things are just going right. So I'm gonna keep going on this positive train, and yeah. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you again next week. Peace. It was a straight shot, but all it took was luck to not get caught. I laid three dimes down, and the machine won 25 cents.
I got a pretty good dang old idea what's going on. I tell you what, man, it'll...